And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 803. Continuing our team-by-team previews for the 2026 fantasy baseball season, Tampa Bay Rays time. And in order to help us break down the Rays, which is like always a fun team, you just don't know what you're really going to get when it comes to fantasy as a whole. You have ideas, but as a whole. And we're going to get it broken down as our friend, our Rays correspondent, as I like to say, joins us. You can find him on Blue Sky at jasoncollette.bsky.social. He's on Sleeper in the Bust. He's at RotoWire and many other. Just find him. He's out there. Jason, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing well, man. How you doing tonight?
Doing well. It feels like I just saw you not too long ago, so this is great. Chatting it up, and the holidays are upon us and almost done now. As New Year's Eve is when this will drop, so people, hope they have a happy New Year's. And, man, it's already 2026, and that's what we're talking Rays. So pretty pumped on this. Before we get to that, though, let people know what you got going on.
Yeah, so right now, in fact, just before you and I started recording this, the first installment of the 2026 Bold Predictions went up. And I did the NL East. And so for those not familiar, I've been doing these around 10 years. And I do a hitter and a pitcher from every single team. And some of them are, they hit really well. And some of them, big misses. But that's what Bold's all about. It, you know, who wants to be safe is boring. So end up doing 60 players overall. And first installment hit. And if you're, for whatever reason, not yet a subscriber to RotoWire, you can always go there and then use the promo code YouTube15 to get 15% off a baseball season subscription. And you get all the stuff from me, from Todd Zola, Jeff Erickson, James Anderson's great work with the prospects and everything. And you know, all the other stuff, it's worth it. And I've been writing at RotoWire at least 10 years now. I think I started in 2015 or 14. I forget. It's been a while, but I look forward to this series every year. And so that's all I'm doing right now. I did all the player. I did my part of the player outlooks for the draft guides and whatnot. Now it's all about the bold prediction time.
Yeah, I always enjoy the bold predictions because you aren't scared to go out there and say some stuff. So I appreciate that because it's the running joke. Okay, this guy's a sleeper. And they start talking about, I saw what Trey Savage one the other day. I'm like, that's not a sleeper.
Oh, boy.
I guess not it. So yeah, you have people like clicks. I get it. But you go out there on the bolds, and that's always good stuff. And so the RotoWire stuff, people should be joined up over there. If for anything, the very least, the pitching grid, but all the other content is amazing. And I was actually on with James on Tuesday, so I was on the show with James. So
I was watching that this morning.
Oh, I'm sorry, but no, I'm just kidding. it was always fun chatting it up with James. But let's get to the race. We'll go through the players here quickly. But before that, what were your thoughts on the 2025 season?
Oh, you know, the 2025 season, with Steinbrenner and everything, yeah, it was always going to be a little weird trying to figure things out. And then with McClanahan, with how that whole process worked through, that was unfortunate how all of that happened. I felt like there were some times where they just left some things on the table that they could have been better. And then by the end, they were like, all right, let's just start playing ahead. Yeah, I would say, and I thought they did a good job for setting the table for 2026. And like, I don't feel it's controversial to say that they are the worst team in the AL East this year, but it's because the AL East is so damn good. They're the worst team on paper. Now they may not even be done. I heard you and James talking about them possibly, the Ketel Marte rumors that have been sitting out there for weeks now, and that could happen. But even if that trade happens, I would say they're still the worst team in the AL East. But in that situation, I feel like there's opportunity. And like, I go back, for those watching instead of listening, you see I'm wearing the Devil Rays hat. I'm not talking Devil Rays days, but right before the 2020 season, that window of time from 2017 to 2019, they were a very entertaining team to watch. And I feel like that's where we're headed right now. Even if they do a trade with Marte, like that kind of situation, where it's going to be extremely tough to be an October baseball team, but they can be a pain in the ass throughout the season with what they have here. And I'm actually looking forward to the 2026 season. Even if they're not playing October baseball, I'm going to have a lot of fun watching this team, I feel, from end of March into end of September to see how disruptive they can be to the narrative for the division and for the American League as a whole.
Yeah, two things there. The AL East is ridiculous. I put together all the outlines for the AL East at once, and I'm just looking at rosters going, this is nuts. We start like watching this, like, so to your point, yeah, they might be the worst team in the East, but they're still not that bad of a team. and they're going to be pesky as all get up when it comes to like the way this roster is built. There's some very, very good talent, like the Camineros of the world and stuff, but there's a lot of just really guys that they click at all can make things really interesting, to your point. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. You mentioned the Steinbrenner Field thing. We'll get to this right out the gate. They're going back to the Trop. We've seen all the pictures, you know, the roof's back, they're redoing things. How big of an effect is that, do you think, going to be? Because, like, my thing is that if they go back to one for one what it was before, okay, but they're rebuilding it. Like, why can't they change a few things? I don't know. Maybe it's because they're raised and they're cheap. But, like, what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much you can do structurally to it. I mean, we saw when they put the pennant porch in left field and they lowered the left field wall. And it actually, you know, came into play when Longoria hit that home run in 2011. You know, there's only so much you can do, and it has changed from when it first opened. But they're only rebuilding the roof. They are doing some things internally with some. Apparently, they were working on the lights, you know, the infamous lights that Willie Adames complained about, and others. You know, they were working on those types of things. So I'm looking forward to seeing what those changes look like with that. But, you know, if you remember way back when, like, I remember going to games back in the Devil Ray days, and there were actual Southwest Airlines seats out in right field bleachers that you could go sit in back when Southwest Airlines was a sponsor of the team. So it's one of those things where over the years it has evolved with it. But I'm just curious to see what it looks like on opening day, because I grew up in the Astrodome. I grew up in Houston as a kid, as an Astros fan. So indoor baseball has always been a thing for me, and just watching the Rays having to play outdoors last year and then just some of the cheap, I mean, yeah, they are actually able to hit some cheap home runs, but just how it impacted the way they pitched was annoying. And so I'm looking forward to them getting back indoors and playing baseball in a controlled environment. And I know some of you guys listening and watching going, so sacrilege. I don't care. I'm sorry. I love indoor baseball. I hate rainouts. I hate having to worry about it. I didn't even go down there this last year because I didn't want to like plan all this and then have a rainout. I am going down this summer. My son turns 21 this summer. I had to pause there as I said that. I'm like, oh my God. But yeah, his birthday is right before the All-Star break. And we're going to go down for a couple of games in July. And it's great because we can make the plans now. I don't have to worry about it being rained out because it's early July. It's even, it should be safe from hurricane season because hurricanes usually hit that area in August and September. So should be good to go. And it's nice to be able to plan ahead like that.
That's great to hear because, yeah, no, there was always the off and on rains. I remember I played DFS and it was just always, okay, are they going to play? What are we going to do? So on and so forth with Steinbrenner Field. I'll ask you this because I'm kind of trying to be goofy with it, but as they're rebuilding inside and changing things, what if they affect the batter's eye that so many people complained about? Now it becomes more hitter friendly in that regard.
I mean, who knows? It used to be that whole area. You know, way back, if you watch some of the old highlights, there's this one particular highlight of Johnny Gomes hitting a home run off Troy Percival that cleared the batter's eye in center field. It used to be a restaurant out there. It was like this dark green thing back in the Devil Ray, and it was a restaurant. You could go back in there. Then they cleared it, and so it's now you can walk all the way around the park. And at least from foul pole to foul pole, you have an unobstructed view of the playing field. One of the odd things about Tropicana Field is in between the foul poles, you don't see anything. Like you're walking the concourse and your view to the play field is blocked just the way it was built. And so that's one of the oddities of it. But I don't know if they're going to impact the batter's eye. I did see one piece that talked about some of the things, and I remember them talking about the lights and adding changing some seating capacity. So maybe there's not as much foul territory either, which will be interesting. To that, but it will. I'm looking forward for them getting back in the ballpark, and being able to play some normal baseball. I mean, with just they actually never had a rain out last year. They had some rain delays, but they never had a rain out. But also playing in that Florida summer, no thanks. No. You know, 72. There's a lot to be said about playing in 72 degrees in your home games without having to worry about humidity or rain.
Totally agree. All right, let's get to the players here. We're going to start with the bats as usual, and we'll start with the young phenom named Junior Caminero. And it depends on where you listen these days that people are like, okay, yeah, 45 homers, 264, awesome. Then you get the, well, he's going back to the Trop arguments. Then there's this, that. Like, there's a lot of things get thrown out there. So I'll just let you go with it. Where are you at on Junior Caminero? Because I love the kid. ADP's 14, 15, give or take right now. I understand the concerns. So where are you at on Junior Caminero?
There's a couple of things with him. So like, I'll put this, I took him 15th overall in my most recent DC 50. So, and like homerism, whatever you want to call it aside, I had no problem taking him 15th. I was picking in the 10th spot. I took Julio Rodriguez with the 10th pick and then came back around, took Caminero for that. So the couple of things that really stood out to me, you know, lines like the home road, like people may say, oh, Steinbrenner. Yeah, his home run, he had 45 home runs last year, 22 at home and 23 on the road. You know, you can't have an even split, but, you know, there you go. It's pretty much dead even. The thing that really stood out to me was he appeared to be like two different hitters between when he was on the road and when he was at home. On the road, he had more, he was more pull conscience. And like, you can go to the Baseball Savant, look at the spray charts. You can see that on the road, more pull con, a lot of stuff. And his batting average was lower at on the road than it was at home because of that approach, I felt. But then you look at home and he was hitting it to all fields. I mean, yeah, he's got power to all fields, but as you know, you don't have to have a lot of power to the opposite field in Steinbrenner, and he did have a few of those. So, you know, if do I think he hits 40 home runs this year? I would take the slight under on that, but it was really impressive to watch him play over the last 2 months of the season and how he really was turning on more velocity, had a better overall approach at the plate. And then, you know, defensively, when the start of the season, he was god awful. He was being pulled for defensive purposes at the end of game in April. And then by the end of the season, he looked much better. Like, you could see that growth, and that's what you really want to see from guys. And so now he's coming into his third full season in the major leagues. And I'm excited to see what he's capable of doing, but how he closed the season was really impressive.
Yeah, like my biggest argument when people say the ballpark power-wise, I'm like, I watched him play in San Francisco on a weekday night and hit one halfway up the bleachers in left center field. That's like, I've watched a ton of games there. The ball does not fly like that
right
at night. So like, if he could do that, not too worried about the trop. Let's put it that way. So power's power with him. He's super young. I guess it's more of the batting average, but I think he'll be just fine. All right, let's get to Yandy Diaz. He's kind of the grizzled vet of this team. When you really break it down, he's gonna be 35 this year. He's not kind of, he is the grizzled vet on this team. We know him for his batting average, another 300 season, Jason, but we saw the 25 homers. Many, again, it's gonna be a common theme. Steinbrenner Fields, what people will tell you. ADP is around 140-ish, 142 right now. Where are you at on Yandy? Because it seems like it's just his job until otherwise notified.
Yeah, I'm surprised he's still on the roster. Like, I felt he was going to be traded last year, felt he'd be traded deadline. Obviously, the club loves him, and he's still here. So it's like, to me, again, I would take the under, and this may be a common theme over, I would take the under on him repeating 25 home runs. But the 300 batting average, I mean, he hits to all fields. You really can't. If anything, you could reverse shift him and be more successful, but he truly hits the ball hard to all fields, and he's, you know, can elevate it when the pitches are there. So he's found that particular piece, but at one point he was homering at a 30 home run pace. Obviously he didn't get there, but this guy, he can hit in his sleep, and he hits high in the lineup, and yeah, he's old and slow in that regard, but he gets on base a ton. And that's why he could hit second, he could hit fourth. We could see where he's going to be in the lineup every single day. He's going to be hitting up there as long as he stays healthy. Every now and then he's prone to like a, you know, that dump truck takes a lot to get moving, and the hamstring, every now and then a leg will get a little sore. So that'll be, I'm also curious to see how that comes back into play, going back to the synthetic playing surface indoors, because you know, being outdoors on the grass in Steinbrenner, the team was relatively healthy last year in that regard, and especially him. Diaz didn't have those particular nagging injuries that had plagued him previously.
That's a good point about the turf, because that does affect a lot of these guys, especially the older guys, as time goes on. And you made me remember my playing days when I always got the yell from the dugout, unhitch the trailer as I'm running to get going. It was always a common theme. All right, let's go to a guy I know you were pretty optimistic on last year. Injuries kind of slowed down Jonathan Aranda's progress, but he still played in 106 games, 14 home runs, hit 316. I guess the biggest surprise, not speaking out of school there, the average. But we're talking about a guy in Aranda who has an ADP of around 175-ish right now. Mm-hmm. That seems pretty light, but it's also, to me, like, what can we expect? Because the batting average was a major outlier from previous seasons, at least.
Yeah, but the approach had changed for him. Like, remember 2024, he looked fantastic in spring training, got hit on the hand really late in spring training, and it cost him some time. Then he had a setback when he was trying to come back from when he was rehabbing from that particular injury. So that really worked on him. And then he had the injury on the first base play this year. And then he comes back right at the end of the season and hits two home runs in three games. It's like, it really, the approach has changed from when he first came up in 2023. I mean, you knew, the thing is, you knew he was going to make it to the majors with the bat, because defensively, I mean, he's at first base because there's really no other option with it. And even with the trade of Brandon Lau and second base opening up, I do not foresee Jonathan Aranda getting second base unless it's a pinch and they're running into something, because the footwork, even back in 2023 when he first came up, you watch some of the games, you're like, oh, that's why. And he hasn't gotten any smaller since 2023. So it's first base and DH for Aranda with this. So you have to, as you're building your fantasy roster, obviously put into play, and maybe he's not going to give you, he's not going to challenge 30 home runs, but the pace he was on last year, he was going to hit 20, and he gets on base a ton. So he's good in OBP leagues and he's going to hit high in this lineup. And so there's still some good value here. Even if he's not hitting the home runs, like a lot of first basemen, he does everything else. The batting average, the runs, the RBIs, does those well. Stolen bases, that's just not going to happen.
Yep, not going to happen with him, which is totally understandable with him. But a guy that will steal a ton of bases if he's playing on the main roster is Chandler Simpson, who actually got sent down at a point last year. That's why we bring this up. But he still stole 44 bags in 109 games with the Rays at .295. So, Jason, we know the average will be pretty good. We know the speed will be there for days. But the team is not like married to him, is where I'm going with this. ADP's 147. There's a lot of outfielders to feed in Tampa Bay. Where are we at on Chandler Simpson? Because I cannot click the button.
Yeah, like Chris Rock once told us, you're only as loyal as your options. And I feel that it wasn't surprising when Jake Mangum got included in the trade to the Pirates, because there's no way that Mangum and Simpson could coexist on this roster again. The Rays outfield combined hit 29 home runs last year. That's just brutal. And when you have Simpson, who's zero, if he hits a home run, it's going to be inside the park. And then you had Mangum with two. That kind of does it. So with Simpson, this has always been a team that's valued defense, and Simpson is rough in the outfield. Just rough. In left field, center field, it doesn't matter. It's not pretty with that. And so one of those guys had to be dealt, as you said, if they're loyal to him, because he does have options. They could send him back down to Durham if they wanted to. And they have added some outfield bats via trade and via free agency this winter. So I would not say that he's guaranteed to make this roster or that he's on this team as a whole by the end of it. So, we're talking trade rumors earlier, who knows what happens, but it's just really an odd fit. And I would love to see the speed succeed, but on a team that puts such emphasis on defense, Simpson is just an odd fit on this roster.
Yep, totally agree. And we'll talk about a prospect later, which I think should be playing over Chandler Simpson if I had it my way. We'll see how that goes.
Right.
You mentioned not a lot of power in the outfield, and part of it's because Josh Lotus can't stay healthy, because he does have 2020 skills. We've seen it once when he played 135 games, but the last 2 years, 106, 108, those are his gameplay. Still plenty of steals. Got you double-digit homers throughout there, but trying to roster him and start him the right time is the problem. Josh Lowe, for now, we assume he's healthy. His ADP is around 265. Are we buying back in? Are we hoping for health? How are we handling Josh Lowe right now?
So I would say it was fun the one season that he did stay healthy, because it helped me win AL Labor that year. And I had rostered Josh Lowe for $2, and that was fun. And I took him in my most recent DC 50 in the 24th round. That's where I value Josh Lowe these days. I mean, honestly, this is a strong side platoon situation. He has never hit lefties. He has never shown an ability to hit lefties. And there's a reason Roster Resource has the big red L on square on him, is because he will be in a platoon. So if you see projections that have Josh Lowe with 500 plus plate appearances, discount them. Not saying throw them away, but discount them, because that's not happening. And there's always, it's an oblique, it's a hamstring, it's always something that catches up with him. So you know, if you look at it and say, hey, here's 450, the stolen bases will be there because he is very good at stealing bases. He's not the fastest guy in the world, but he is really good at stealing bases and very successful at it. And so he'll have the opportunity to run. I'm looking at Steamer right now, and they're saying 476 at bats. That's comfortable. I could see that with 15 home runs and 20 steals. So in a 248 average, I can live with all of that. But if they're doing Marte, I don't know how Josh Lowe was not involved in a deal if they go after Marte. You know, you got to have some bat go with this situation. But either way, this will be Josh Lowe's last season in Tampa Bay, the way I'm looking at this.
All right. A guy that they added this year, an older guy to kind of join Yandy at the AARP line, is Cedric Mullins, who honestly feels like the perfect Tampa Bay Ray right now. He's just a guy that's going to platoon, but in his stronger platoon, he's still getting a 15-plus homers and probably 20-plus steals. Average be damned, basically, but he's going to get you the power and speed you're looking for with an ADP of close to 355. So he's not costing you much in drafts. Right. Just like, are the Rays going to actually use him kind of like the Orioles did, I guess?
I mean, 1 year, $7 million. So they're paying him like a mostly everyday player type of situation. I'm just not buying he's going to play center field. I don't. Yeah, I heard you and James talking this morning on the podcast, and it's like, this team's not done. And that's been my feeling all winter. It's like, I don't believe, like, if you look at roster resource right now, they're having Mullins as the center fielder.
Yeah.
Center fielder is the guy they have down in AAA right now in the depth chart. That's the center fielder. I think Mullins is your right fielder. And that's why I feel that Lowe, hopefully he has an apartment lease and not a mortgage, because I really don't see how he stays in Tampa Bay this year. Just trying to figure out this roster and the fact they traded three guys off the 26 man roster to acquire the guy the prospect we're talking about. Like, they didn't do that just to get another prospect. You give up three active roster guys. There's a plan for that. And right now, roster resource is not reflecting that plan.
Yep. Totally agree. So Mullins needs some injuries, it sounds like, to get in there. And that's, yeah, you never know. We'll see what happens.
I think he'll be in the line.
Or he can play right field, to your point, if Lowe's out of the way.
Yeah.
But I agree. Like, before they even traded for the prospect, like, DeLuca's a better, at least, defensive center fielder in this scenario. So I was kind of surprised by all that for a team, again, as you mentioned earlier, values defense. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Richie Palacios, because this is one of those guys in fantasy. Everyone's like, oh, he's always like second base outfield. He's got all this eligibility. It's really cool. But then, like, he never really sticks between injuries and, you know, production or whatever. It's tricky with him. And, you know, he's got a ton of speed, a little more power than Chandler Simpson, bars low there. They have him projected to lead off. I don't really see how that happens. Maybe I'm wrong on this one. But what are your thoughts on Richie Palacios? Because this feels like another guy similar to Cedric. I could be totally wrong, that he's projected to play second base, but hopefully the Rays aren't done, I guess.
Well, you know, when you look at the roster the way this is, I actually don't have a problem with him playing second, with him leading off. The fascinating thing to me is in that aforementioned DC 50, I had him in my queue the last five rounds and never pulled the trigger, and nobody did. He went undrafted. So he went 600 picks in a DC 50, and nobody took Palacios. Yet he's being projected here as a leadoff. And one of the reasons why is, as a Ray, he's had a double-digit walk rate. And so he's got a good approach at the plate, and one of the things about his skill set is the stolen bases. Yeah, he's got some speed. He's 27 for 28 as a major leaguer stealing bases. That's when you have that kind of success rate, you have a green light. And so you have him lead off. I'm not sure he's an everyday player, but the fact that he can steal bases like that and he has a good approach at the plate, I'm intrigued. If he's going his ADP, you know, he didn't go in that DC 50. His ADP currently is sitting 733. I mean, that's incredibly low. This is a great value. This is, you know, the theme that you and James had. We're looking for values that roster resources is not reflecting. This one's up here, and his ADP is still this low. He should have been drafting that DC 50. I already had six Rays on my team. I'm not taking the seventh. I spent my 50th round pick on my little pet project this winter, Maximo Acosta with Miami. So that's where I went. But Palacios, like I said, he was sitting in my queue multiple rounds. And then I was just surprised. I looking earlier today, I was like, wow, nobody ever took the guy. I'm kind of surprised. In a DC 50, just his second base and outfield eligibility alone should have been drafted.
Yeah, I am kind of surprised now that you mentioned it, looking at the sheet that you sent over, that, you know, the flexibility alone usually gets that picked up late,
right?
In a 50, let alone to the playing time you're discussing. And we will have to talk Max Domi Acosta some other time, because I'm a fan and I have been berated by my co-host on Tuesday and Thursday evenings about who this individual is. So I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts there. Maybe he'll be in a bold prediction for you. I don't know.
It's I mean, the state of Florida is an audition. Yes. I mean, neither team is going to be competitive. And in those types of situations, you have opportunities. I mean, look at the White Sox last year, Leonid Sosa, a guy you and I both really liked. Yes. Last year, it's like the opportunity was wide open, and he took advantage of it. And that's when I kind of look at, when I'm looking at things on the Rays and on the Marlins, it's an audition. They should let these guys try to do something. And you look at Acosta and you watch some of that video, you're like, ooh, there's some, this was the guy that they got for Jake Berger when they made that trade. So it's not like he was just some toss away guy. Yeah, there's definitely flaws there. I'm not going to say he's without flaw, but he's very intriguing. And for me, it's like at the 50th round, do I take a seventh Ray? Nah, I'm going to go ahead and take this guy because I'm intrigued enough where I'm going to take this, because Palacios could get hurt again. That's been one of the issues why he was available. You know, he was available. He was with the Guardians and he's with the Cardinals. Forget the order, but you know, the Rays are his third organization in 4 years.
Yep, very, very true. Last but not least, catching Nick Fortes. The Rays, it's been a while since I feel like there's been a catcher we've been in love with for fantasy in Tampa Bay. It's just not one of their things to me. I have no real interest here. I'm just going to throw it out there to you.
It's been a while. It's been like John Jaso is the last guy. Please, I mean, I would take John Jaso back right now. I think he fishes off a coast somewhere. I would still take him right now. Love that dude. This is absolutely a problem on the roster. I don't know how they fix it. You know, when they did the trade for Brandon Lau, this is how bad things are. I was like, could you get Joey Bart in that trade from the Pittsburgh Pirates? They have all these catchers.
It would be an upgrade.
It would be an upgrade. So the thing here with them, and this, neither of these catchers are draftable for fantasy purpose. I mean, if you're in a 12 team AL only, you're going to have to, but if you're not in those leagues, you don't have to listen. But here's where it comes into play. It's how they impact the pitchers, because the duo of Hunter Fiducia and Nick Fortes cannot throw out runners. They are god awful. I was looking at the stats on this. Fiducia was 3 of 29 last year, and Fortes was 3 of 23. Jeez. I mean, that's just a free license to run by the other teams. Danny Jansen was better, but Danny Jansen was also a terrible framer. So I don't know if you've done the Rangers preview yet, but as you think about your Rangers, understand that Danny Jansen is a terrible, terrible framer. So I feel like this is a wash, because Fortes is a really good framer. Fiducia, okay, but Fortes is really good in that capacity. But if he can't throw out runners, it's kind of a wash. And so I'm curious to see how the pitching staff works with Fortes as a whole during the year, because he's going to be the 70 catcher, 70% of the time, and Fiducia will get 30%, maybe. But neither of these guys can throw anybody out, and I don't see another solution on the open market for them to go address the situation. So this is your team on the floor, to quote Hickory, the Hoosiers. You know, this is your team on the floor. This is it. And I would expect the Rays and Marlins to be the two worst teams in baseball in controlling the running game again.
Yep, no, that's good to know, because that's something to think about for streaming purposes and whatnot when you're facing the Rays. Any other hitters that you'd like to that's currently on the roster before we move on to pitching? We'll talk about that prospect. We're going to keep just hitting the prospect. We'll talk about him later.
I mean, it's, anybody to else? Me, it's the weirdness. It's all the lefty bats. You know, you've got, in the outfield alone, you've got Simpson, you've got Mullins, you've got Josh Lowe, you've got Jake Fraley. And then you got Jacob Melton. That's five. And they got rid of Mangum. That was six. But you have all of these lefty bats. And so it's like, how do you platoon all of these guys? And so that's where I'm really confused on how this is all going to work. So Ryan Valeti and Johnny DeLuca are going to get some short side, but short side doesn't have any fantasy relevancy unless you're in a 50 round and they're facing a bunch of lefties that week. So, you know, quite honestly, there's nobody else that I'm really excited about. I'm more excited about like Taylor Walls getting out of this lineup than anything else.
Yeah, we'll definitely get to that.
Oh, please. But there's no, the fantasy relevancy here is in the top six guys. And then whatever happens with Simpson, but there's, the current roster construction is just really weird right now, and it does not feel done. And if it is done, this is going to be an interesting season.
Might be challenging the White Sox for a few things. Let's go to the mound. Drew Rasmussen coming off 31 starts last year, which is great to see. 150 innings, most of his career. It's his fifth straight year with a sub-3 ERA, sub-2.85 ERA, given some are small samples. Going to be kind with that, but he's been consistently very, very good is what I'm trying to get at. Strikeouts are still pretty good. It's more like, and the whip's outstanding, three straight years below 1.1. Yep. Like, he's great for ratios. It's just a matter of, like, he got the 150 innings, which is great. So the Rays showed some love there. It's basically like six innings a start, mm-hmm. almost, give or take, which we'll take. But there were a lot of starts, as you know, where it's like, okay, it's four innings, or they skip a start, or this and that. Where are you at on a guy like Drew Rasmussen, who I like a lot, but an ADP of 155 seems pretty good still?
I mean, I like him. I love watching the guy pitch. I'm just looking at a 171 inning projection at Steamer and going, no. I don't see that happening. I mean, one of the things that was quite interesting with how the Rays managed Rasmussen this year is it was like right before the All-Star break. They used the All-Star break and the time just before it as a way to kind of control things. So there were a couple of outings there where Rasmussen was going like three innings. And then they coming out of the break, they're like, all right, go back, go ahead and do what you want. And he ended up getting to 150 innings. And, you know, with him, remember, he's had three elbows, so there's not going to be a fourth. The next time his arm goes, it goes and it's gone. So I'm like, I'm wondering if there's been some kind of conversation behind the scenes, but like, just let me pitch. You know, I'm making good money for a guy with three major elbow surgeries. So just let me throw, because the next time it goes, I'm done and I'm retiring. So I would, again, take the under on 171 pitches, but whatever he does pitch, you know, you're going to get good skills. Even if you're not getting a ton of strikeouts, because that's not his game. He loves to get out of an inning as quickly as possible. And if he can get a pop up, and that's one of the things I'm really looking forward back at Tropicana Field, is some of that weak contact on the infield that's going to stay in the field of play instead of going into the stands as a foul ball because of how narrow the foul territory was at Steinbrenner. So there's some added value there.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. He's the ratios I think are just so valuable. So like, it's a lot of how you build your maybe couple starters before that could go a long way in what you want to do with Drew Rasmussen. Now, here's a pitcher I know you do like based on you did take him in this draft, and that is Ryan Pepiot, who came over from the Dodgers a year or two ago. And it's a guy that gave you a 3.86 ERA, which is still pretty darn good. I think he's got better strikeout stuff than he – near 25% K rate, still pretty good. But mm-hmm. the walks held him back just a tad. Overall, really strong season. More impressively, what I like to see is the 167 innings. So where are you at on Ryan Pepiot this year?
Yeah, I was super impressed how he pitched in the second half of the season. I know the ERA doesn't show you looking like, oh, he's got a 489 ERA, but he held the league to a 205 average. It was cutting down on his walks. And out of Steinbrenner, 17 of his 26 home runs were in Steinbrenner last year. So you know, you figure let's shave six off that. And all of a sudden, ERA is coming down even more. So this is why that I like him. Of all the pitchers that I'm worried that you look, like, okay, he's coming from Steinbrenner back to Tropicana. He's the perfect guy for pitching in Tropicana Field. And so I'm excited to see what he does going back in the Tropicana Field after having to pitch outdoors and then just get victimized by home runs of Steinbrenner.
Yep. No, I like that quite a bit. The home runs crushed a lot of guys. Unfortunately, one I really liked is in Baltimore now, but I digress on that. I was so looking forward to the return of the Trop, but that will not happen. Shane McClanahan, I will have zero shares this year, Jason. I mentioned it. Maybe he'll be good. I can't do it anymore. I got to see the guy pitch. And ADP's 255-ish. That's better than last year. Yeah. People were still drafting him high. I mentioned to James that I saw a tweet that the last start he made was right before, like, basically Paul Skeens made his debut around the same time, give or take. Where are you at on Shane O'Mac this year? Because
yeah.
I know they want him to be good, but it's just tricky.
So, like last year in AL Labor, Shane McClanahan was my SP1, and Spencer Arrighetti was my SP3. And yeah, five innings between. I forget, but yeah, so that was bad. But you know, for me, the trade of Shane Boz said a couple of things. It's like, because you know, again, the Ketel Marte trade rumors that may or may not happen. That trade's not happening without pitching going over there as well. So you sent Shane Baz to Baltimore, and you got back four prospects and a competitive balance pick. And so to me, that part of the story behind the story there is maybe they do feel good about McClanahan's ability to come back and pitch this year, because they thought he was going to be able to come back, and then it was like setback and another setback, and then he didn't pitch. So they must feel good about that, because you look at the rest, and yeah, they did add Steven Matz, but you look at the rest of the options, and they added Osvaldo Beto, and they still have Joe Rock and Ian Seymour, but these are all fives. I mean, these are all back end of the rotation types. And McClanahan is supposed to be your ace anywhere from your SP1 to SP3, but they must feel good about McClanahan's ability to pitch this year. I'm with you though, I got burned pretty badly last year. I let him go in a league where I had the chance to keep him at $13. I let him go back. I'm not willing to pay that price with that. And I was talking to our friend Ian Khan this afternoon, and we were talking about McClanahan in particular. And I felt like if I'm in an auction, like he and I are in AL labor together in Phoenix at the end of February, and I'm like, $5-7 tops. If I said eight, look at me and be like, what are you doing? Please remind me that I said this, because I don't want to be here again. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But there's just that level of uncertainty when a guy has not pitched for a full season, and we really don't know exactly why this whole nerve thing. There's just we don't have a lot of details behind it. So it just gives me a lot of pause, as you can tell, even as I'm talking here. I'm just not comfortable building a roster around McClanahan as an SP3 for fantasy purposes.
Yeah, it's very, very tricky, because like you said, we don't know anything really. Like, we're just assuming that he's good. And the points you make, the signs point to the Rays think he's good. That's fair. But man, it's just been a rough go of late. And from a potential long-term ace to this has been – a big bummer is what I would say, to put it nicely. All right, I'm just going to package this one together here. According to Roster Resource, the four and the five is Steven Matz and Joe Boyle. Steven Matz, I think we know who he is. Could be a veteran innings eater, do his thing. Like, is it great? Sometimes. Is it not? Sometimes. Joe Boyle could be an electric arm, but also has zero command at times. So where are you at on these? Because I've always been a Boyle fan. I think he might be better suited for the back end of a bullpen, but I don't know. What's your thoughts on these two?
And Boyle's kind of crazy, because you go back and go look at his home road splits. He was amazing at Steinbrenner. He was horrendous on the road. And it's just kind of crazy to go look at that. But go look at, go to Fangraphs, pull up the splits and look. And you're like, really? That happened? It did. But I was impressed with how Kyle Schneider was able to tweak Boyle. Because if you watch Boyle pitch in 2024 with Oakland and then watched him pitch last year, you could see the changes in the repertoire, in the mechanics. And he actually could find the strike zone on a semi-regular basis, whereas some of those Oakland outings were all over the place with that. So I they're going to give him enough time to look at the rotation. Now, he may not be deep in those games, because he does throw a lot of pitches, and he may not be able to go deep into games with that, but I feel he'll be in the rotation. With Matz, this is a guy apparently they've tried to get previously, and if this was Matz going into Steinbrenner, I would want zero shares of that, but him going into Tropicana Field becomes a little interesting with his ability to the way he's able to generate softer contact. So that's intriguing in a deeper league. And then if you look at Ian Seymour, I know you and James were talking about him today and how much you both like him, and how he was a talk at First Pitch Arizona. There's a role, like if you go back, I mentioned this being like a 2017 to 2019 run for the Rays here. Go back and look how Ryan Yarbrough was used at that time. And that's how I feel that Seymour has a fit on this roster. Like, he was coming in as a bulk guy last year at times. And I feel that he has a chance to come in and do that and vulture some wins and being used as that. Like, if Boyle can't go deep in a situation, or there's a matchup where it's like, okay, this makes a lot of sense to go this direction. Because I really do like the swing and miss in Seymour's game. He's just got one of those unique deliveries with that head whack and the way the extension on his pitches and the changeup. And just, I like watching him pitch, and I feel that there's a role for him in that capacity. And I mentioned Osvaldo Beto, and I know he was god awful for Athletics last year, but I encourage people to go to the Savant, go to Baseball Savant, go back and look at his 2024 profile. And there's a lot of good stuff there. And I'm looking at it over here on my other screen. And it's like, you look at His slider, 34% whiff rate. Changeup, 25% whiff rate. Cutter, 29% whiff rate. Four pitches at, you know, 192, 197, 121, 152. Like, there's a lot of good stuff there. But he was eaten alive by Sutter Health Park. And they were like, you can't keep the ball in the yard here. Throw some more sinkers. And the sinker was terrible in 2024. They had him throw it more often than in 2025. Guess what? It was still terrible. And so, you know, if let Kyle Snyder play with him a little bit, see what's here. Maybe there's nothing and they let him go. But Beto's out of options. He's got to make this club out of the pen. And he could be a swing guy for them. And, you know, I like giving AL-only folks names to consider. And I was pretty in on Beto last year based off of how he pitched in 2024. And now that he's back in a normal baseball park, I'm intrigued again.
Yeah, I like the Beto shout. That's in 2024. I remember picking him up in Fab and rolling with him quite a bit, at least in his Oakland starts at the time. Like, they're very, very solid in that ballpark. And it's a good point. Like, I was in late in drafts last year too, and obviously didn't keep him for very long after things got ugly, but I'm with you. The skills were much improved from what they saw in Pittsburgh when he went over to Oakland. And I'd be interested to see if Snyder could do something there. Mm-hmm. Bullpen. This is another one of just a theme with the Rays. What are we doing? It's Edwin Useta. You have Griffin Jacks. Some people like Garrett Clevenger as well. It goes Jacks at around 245, Useta around 280, Clevenger after 500. How are you seeing this pan out?
So, the trade with the Pirates kind of threw me off here, because at the point when both Montgomery and Clevenger was on this, I could have made a case for Clevenger to be a closer here, to be the primary closer. You look at the stuff, his stuff plus and all of his scores dominate. They look fantastic. And with now he's the only lefty in the pen, and maybe they could still do something, because while he's the only lefty in the pen, there's a bunch of righties with changeups and splitters. So that kind of works as an offsetting pitch for platoon split situations too. But I feel that where I would have been a little more aggressive on Clevenger, I now want to fade that off a little bit, because he could be the only lefty in that pen with that situation. And then, you know, but if you line up the stuff of Useta and Jacks and Clevenger and Baker, you could honestly make a case for all of them, with Useta being the worst case of all. So that's the kind of the craziest part of it. This honestly is a strength of this team right now, is that seventh, eighth, and ninth, if they can get the ball to that quartet, that's the one I'm looking for, the quartet of relievers there, they're in good shape. And so I think this is honestly the strength of the pitching staff is here, because they have the options to go in multiple directions here.
All right, let's talk prospects. We've been joking about it all show. Who are some of the names we should be looking forward to?
I mean, like I said, with Jacob Melton, the fact that the Rays gave up Brandon Lau and Jake Mangum and Mason Montgomery, these are three regulars for them last year to get this guy. This is not because they're going to keep him in Durham. Jacob Melton should be he's going to be the everyday center fielder, and they're going to live with his flaws. Again, this team is not going to be a playoff team. They can do this. You know, previously maybe they couldn't, but this is not going to be a playoff team. They'll be playing competitive baseball, but this is not going to be a 90 win team, 88 plus wins. That's what you're going to need to get in the postseason. That's not this team. And so Jacob Melton, as long as he doesn't completely fall on his face in spring training, is going to be on the active roster, in my opinion. And so you know, do what you will with the rest of the depth chart, but that's going to be there. And I would like to make the same case for Carson Williams. I mean, Taylor Walls is a good defensive shortstop. He's, you know, his outs above average are good. But the issue is Taylor Walls cannot hit at all. He's just terrible. And Carson Williams has his flaws. He strikes out a bunch, but Carson Williams is a great defender. So if it's like the defense, just let him go out there. And see if he's going to be able to make the contact at the major league level, because you're not losing anything. It's not like Walls is giving you anything at the plate, and he's better off being a reserve guy than he is as a starter. So I'd like to see that situation play out, but I'm most excited to see those two guys. Now, I mentioned at the catching position how bad things are there, and they don't really have another way to do anything. Dom Keegan would be the next name up. He is on the 40-man roster, but that's another bat first over defense situation. So again, the catching situation is going to be, it is what it is this year, and that's not going to get any better. But defensively, you know, at first base, I'm curious to see if Trey Morgan makes his way up. Cause if, you know, let's say the team is a little worse than I'm talking here and they do trade Yandy Diaz, Trey Morgan is a really good glove guy at first base. it would be a huge drop off with at the plate, obviously. But that's another name to keep in mind. I would expect to see Trey Morgan at some point this year too.
All right, last question I have for you, Jason. I know you've kind of hinted at it, worst team in the AL East, but what's your overall expectations from this squad? Because it's a tough mountain to climb, but I think they'll be pretty competitive, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I would love for them to get back to 500. That was my goal last year going into the season. I thought that they were like an 82 to 85 win team this year. I feel like, I always want them to be an 81 and 81 at least with that. And so this was the first year where it was like, man, at the end of the year, I was like, you left a lot on the table. It should have been a little better. But this year, you know, they could finish dead last in the AL East, but there's no shame in that game, the way the division looks on paper this year. And, you know, maybe if this roster is not done and they make another move or two, then we'll see what happens. But I mean, they're definitely going to be competitive. They're not going to be a doormat like some of these other teams out there, but it is, there's no way to sugarcoat that the fact that this is not going to be a team that's going to be playing for a wild card the final 2 weeks of the season. If they are, I would love to be wrong, but I just don't see it.
Fair enough. We can't all be playoff teams. Trust me. I learned that in recent years as well. All right, my friend, that was great. A lot of fun talking Rays with you. Before we head out of here, let everybody know where they can find you and what you got going on.
Yeah, find me on Blue Sky at Jason Collette. I'll come over to RotoWire. Like I said, it did the first installment of the Bold Prediction Series NL East. I'll be doing the AL East this coming week, and you know, each of the next 5 weeks there'll be another one until you have 60 names, and then I will be heading out to Phoenix at the end of February for the live labor draft again, which is great considering I've had to do it online the last couple of years, and I don't like online drafts. So to be able to do that live and pull in some of the Sabre conference while we're out there is going to be fun. And then just a lot of drafts. I don't know about you. I was setting up my calendar and it was like, okay, I got to fly home overnight from labor to be home for Hardballers draft with our friend Rob McCabe and a bunch of others. Yeah. And that's local draft. So that's Sunday at like noon. And I'll be like red eye doing that one. Then I got to go, you know, New York City for Tout Wars. Then I got to come home. It's like all of these drafts happening. I got Wharf draft the weekend after Valentine's Day. So the schedule is full between now and the opening day. It's just, I think I have 2 weekends to myself between now and then.
Yeah, I feel you there. I keep looking at the calendar. It gets busier and busier. And it's beautiful. It's baseball, but it is a lot going on. So hopefully you survive it, pick some winners, and have a good time. But appreciate you joining me as always, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. Love doing this every year.
All right, everybody. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 803, your 2026 Tampa Bay Rays preview. Catch y'all next time.